Good morning, everybody. Afreilich and Chanukah and Chodesh Tov. Thank you for joining us. No greater way to celebrate Chanukah than to learn Torah together. After all, Chanukah is the time when there was an attempt, Hashkicham Torah Secha, that we should forget, that we should not have the ability to study our Torah, and this is the greatest way that we can show that we have been able to overcome all of the obstacles throughout the many millennia, throughout the many generations of Galus, that we still have the ability to get together and study Torah. So the Rambam writes, in framing our discussion for today, the Rambam in Hilchos Chanukah in the very last parak writes, Mitzvah Ner Chanukah, Mitzvah Chaviva Hi Ad Me'od. The Mitzvah of Neros Chanukah is one which is extremely beloved. V'tzarech Adam Lehizarba, a person has to be careful to do their best to make sure to fulfill it to the best of their ability. We spoke about that last week. And the objective of the mitzvah of Neros Chanukah is Kidei Lehodia Hanes, in order to publicize the great miracle that took place, Ulahosiv Bishvach Hakel Vehodayalo Alanisim She'asalanu. The objective of Chanukah is, number one, he says, to publicize the miracle, let everybody know about what happened. But also, he says, a very important part of the nes of the mitzvah is Lehosiv Bishvach Hakel Vehodayalo Alanisim She'asalanu, that we make time throughout this period of Chanukah to thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu and to be modeh to Him, to thank Him and to give shvach and to give praise to Him on all of the miracles that He performs for us. So we know that we say in Al HaNisim, it's something that we recite in every tefillah that we daven on Chanukah and also in the benching. We say there, Bayamim Ahem Bazman Hazeh. And the question is, what does it mean that we say, Sha'asal Nisim Labosenu Bayamim Ahem, in those days, Bazman Hazeh, the miracles that happened then are not really happening today. There's something that happened thousands of years ago. So what do we mean when we say Bayamim Ahem Bazman Hazeh? And the Taz writes in his commentary on Shulchan Aruch in the name of the Levush that what we mean by that is as follows. Whenever a person has an obligation to say Hallel, whenever a person has an obligation like on Chanukah or any other time of the year, so the Taz argues that we have an obligation not only to recount the great miracles that took place thousands of years ago, let's say on Pesach we say Hallel for all the great things that took place on the occasion of Yetzias Mitzrayim, but we have an obligation on those opportunities as well to also make time to highlight and to think about, to consider how many miracles we are experiencing in our lives today as well. And therefore we say, Bayamim Ahem, we make time throughout the season of Chanukah to thank you for all the great things that took place in their days. But also we make time in this season of Chanukah to thank you, Bazman Hazeh, for all the great things that we experience in our lives as well. And that's a very important part of what Chanukah is all about. And therefore I decided that in honor of the last day of Chanukah, which is tonight, we'll have the opportunity now to make the most of this opportunity, of this experience, and talk a little bit about our obligation of being modeh u'mahalel, of how important it is for us to be grateful to the Ribono Shel Olam, to give our thanks and our praise to Him for all of the great blessings that we have in our lives. It's true, there are many who suffer throughout life. There are many who have difficulties throughout life. There are many who have been through unimaginable tragedies. Just think about what took place the other night. It's so horrific and it's hard for us to get it out of our minds. But at the same time, when we look at how many great miracles we experience throughout our lives, when we look at how many amazing things the Ribono Shel Olam blesses us with, and when you think about how lucky we are to have all of the communities and the families and the wonderful blessings that we all have, what we say in Modim every day, Anisecha Shebechol Yom Imanu, we have so many incredible miracles that we have on an ongoing basis that we just don't really make the time to think about often enough. And Chanukah is the perfect time for us to think about that and to consider what life would be perhaps without all of that. What would life look like if we didn't have all of those blessings and all of those miracles? And yes, it's something that unfortunately we don't think about enough, but at least in this season of Chanukah, we should do our best to do so. If you look at the very beginning of the Torah, the Chumash begins, Bereshis Bara Elokim. And the Medrash assumes that there's a hidden meaning in that pasuk as well. It doesn't just mean Bereshis, in the beginning Hashem created, but it also means Bishvil Reshis, for the purpose of Reshis. That was the justification for the creation of the whole world. Now, what does it mean? Because there would be a Reshis, therefore the world was worthy of being created. What is this Reshis that we don't really know much about? So the Medrash has three opinions exactly what it means. Four opinions, but we'll talk about three. The Medrash writes, number one, Bishvil Yisrael Shenikra Reshis. There would come a time when there would be a Jewish people who are referred to as Reshis, and therefore, for the sake of the Jewish people alone, it was worthy of the world being created. That is opinion number one. Opinion number two, the Medrash says, Bishvil Torah Shenikra Reishis, Shenemar, Reishis Chachma Yiras Hashem. The Torah itself is referred to as Reishis, and therefore the Medrash tells us that the sole justification for the creation of the world was because at some point in history there would be a Torah, and that was a good enough reason for the world to have been created. But finally, the Medrash says, perhaps the justification for our world has nothing to do with the Torah, it has nothing to do with the fact that there's going to be a Jewish people, but rather because the Medrash says, Bishvil Bikurim, because at some point there would be a mitzvah of Bikurim, which is, at the beginning of a season, we have an obligation to bring the first fruits to the Beis HaMikdash and offer them to the Kohanim. And there, says the Medrash, that is the sole reason, that is the sole justification why our world was created, which doesn't really make so much sense. The Jewish people is a very important part of history. And the Torah itself was the most monumental experience that God ever had with His people. So what exactly does it mean? How do you fit this into that sequence? How could it be that perhaps the world was only created because at some point we would have a mitzvah of Bikurim? We also have the mitzvah of keeping Shabbos. And we have many other mitzvahs that would have been on the forefront of our consciousness if we would consider why it is that the world was worthy of being created. Why was Bikurim singled out? And the Mefarshim explained very simply, because Bikurim is all about a person coming before God, a person admitting to God and saying that I am indebted to you, I am grateful to you, because I know and I recognize that everything that I have, that all the bounty that I have been blessed with is all because of you. And in turn, I give it all back to you, God, and I bring it to the Beis HaMikdash, and I offer it to the Kohanim, and I show that I understand and I trust and I believe that nothing that I have in my life is mine, and everything that I have is really as a result of that which God has blessed me with. And therefore, the Medrash tells us, that is really what human beings are meant to do. That is really what human beings are all about. We have the opportunity to recognize God in every moment of our lives and to thank Him for everything that He gives us. Perhaps one of the most important passages of the Ramban in all of his commentary on Chumash, and the Ramban had a lot to say about a lot of things, but probably this is one of the most famous things that he ever said, is what he writes in the end of Parshas Bo. And a person should really know this by heart, because it's something that is so important and so fundamental for everything that we do throughout our lives. The Ramban says, if I was able to boil down all of the 613 mitzvahs to one point, which, I don't know, we can challenge each other, how would you try to figure out what is the objective of all the mitzvahs that we do throughout the year? It's hard to really say what that is, but the Ramban here gives us the secret, and he says, V'kavanas kol ha-mitzvahs. If you were able to take all of the mitzvahs, all of the spiritual experience that we have throughout the year, and just boil it down and break it down to one fundamental issue, to one most important tenor, what is our faith all about? He says it would be the following. Number one, shanamin belokeinu. Person has to have the prerequisite of believing in God. If you don't believe in God, then there's no reason to perform any of His mitzvahs. So says the Ramban. Number one, which is really the introduction to any observance that we have, is shanamin belokeinu. You have to believe in God. But after you get past that hurdle, so now we believe in God. That's the baseline. And now we know that the reason why we're doing things is because God instructed us to do it. Says the Ramban. Now, what is the objective of everything that we're doing? The Ramban tells us the secret is v'noda elav shehu bara'anu. The point of everything that we do is to give us opportunities to thank God for the fact that He created us, that He put us in this world, and He gave us the opportunity to enjoy life. V'hi kavanas hayitzira. Says the Ramban, this is why the world was created. This is it. V'noda elav shehu bara'anu. God created us in order that we can have the opportunity to give back to Him. That we can make time to recognize His greatness. She'ein lanu tam acher b'yitzira harishona. He says there is no other reason for the world to have been created originally. Ve'ein kel elyon chafetz b'tachtonim. Do you think God needs your lulav and God needs your shofar? Do you think God needs your Shabbos candles? He doesn't need any of it. God put us into this world just so that we can have the opportunity to serve Him, which will lead us to have a recognition that He is the one who is the driving force in our lives. And that, says the Ramban, is the sole purpose for everything that we do. Milvad sheyeda ha'adam v'yoda lelokav shebaro. Very powerful statement of the Ramban, but a very informative one. That when you think about all of the vast array of mitzvahs that we perform throughout the year, and all of the opportunities that we have to connect with God, all of those are meant just to focus our attention on giving thanks, on recognizing the presence of God in our lives. And in fact, the Pasuk says, in the end of Sefer Bereishis, we're told that Yaakov Avinu singles out each one of his children and gives them a particular message that is relevant to their personality. So the Torah tells us that when he calls Yehuda in, he says, Yehuda, ata yoducha achecha. Now, how do you translate those words? What does it mean? Ata yoducha achecha. Your brothers will
thank you.
Thank you? Right? That's probably the most obvious translation. Your brothers will thank you. But what does that mean? Your brothers will thank you? Why will the brothers thank Yehuda? What did he ever do for them? He wasn't their father. He wasn't the caretaker. What did he provide the brothers with? So what does it mean? Ata yoducha achecha. Yehuda, you are singled out because your brothers will thank you. So the Targum Yonasan ben Uziel writes on the commentary on Chumash, he says no. What it means is that your brothers will go down in history being known by your name. They will be Yodua. They will be known by the name Yehuda, which is why we're called Jews. We are called Yehudim. We are the Jewish people who come from the tribe of Judah. But the question is, maybe I'm from the tribe of Reuven or Shimon, so why don't I refer to myself as a Shimoni instead of a Yehudi? Why don't I refer to myself as a Reuveni? Why do we refer to our people as Yehudim? Explains the Targum Yonasan, because this is what we're all about. We are all about Hodah. This is what the Jewish people are all about. This is at our core what we do. We are Yehudim because we are a grateful people. And we understand that that's what we're here to do. And that's what we're here to accomplish, like the Ramban tells us. That is the Kavanas Kol HaYetzirah. That is the reason why we were created. And this is the reason why we go down in history for all posterity as the Yehudim, as the ones who are grateful, as the ones who live through life being thankful, because this is really what we do. And every Shabbos we say in Nishmas, Shekein Chovas Kol HaYetzirim. This is the obligation of every human being, that when we stand before God, we should make time lahodos ulahalel, lefa'er, leromeim, lahader, levarech, la'aleu, lekales. This is the chovas kol hayitzurim. This is the obligation of all living beings, that we should make time throughout the experience of our lives to be grateful to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and to recognize how much He has provided us with. Now, hakaras hatov and being grateful is not something that is always so simple, because it is not always obvious to figure out who we owe the debt of gratitude to. We go through life and we're not only thankful to God, but we have to be grateful to many people around us who have helped us along the way as well. But it's not always so obvious who was involved. And this is something that we learn, if you look at number Dalet here, where the Medrash has a very fascinating comment made by the daughters of Yisro. So what are we told there? The Medrash tells us there that Moshe Rabbeinu has an incident in Mitzrayim, and he's afraid for his life, and now he runs away down to Midian. And like all good stories in Chumash, he ends up by the well, and he sees there are a group of women that are being abused and taken advantage of, and he decides to defend them, and they run back to their father and they say, Ish Mitzri Hitzilanu Miyad Haroim. There was an Egyptian man who happened to show up, and we didn't know who he was, and he comes to the well and he sees how terribly we're being treated, and he saved us. And therefore we should invite him into our home. Now, unbeknownst to them, he would end up becoming one of their spouses, but originally this is the exchange that took place. So says the Medrash. Vatomarna, and they say to their father, Ish Mitzri Hitzilanu Miyad Haroim. There was an Egyptian man who saved our lives from the local shepherds who were harassing us. Vichi Mitzri Haya Moshe? Was Moshe Rabbeinu really an Egyptian? Why are they referring to him as an Ish Mitzri? Why are they calling him an Egyptian man? Says the Medrash, Ela Levusho Mitzri, Behu Ivri. It just means he was wearing the robes of the Egyptians, because after all, he had just run away from the palace, and now he made his way down to Midian. He didn't have any other clothing, so obviously he was a Jew, but they were just telling their father in the description that they gave, it was that Moshe Rabbeinu was wearing these clothing of an Egyptian. Dabar Acher, says the Midrash, no, that's not what it means when it says, Ish Mitzri Hitzilanu. They knew quite well that Moshe Rabbeinu was a Jew. They understood, and he was dressed like a Jew, and he spoke like a Jew. It was clear that he was an Ish Ivri. So why did they refer to him as an Ish Mitzri, says the Medrash, for a different reason. The Medrash says this can be comparable to someone who gets bitten by a certain rodent. Now back in the times of the Gemara, they had very primitive medicine, not the kind of medicine or the research that we have today. And they had a belief that somebody who was bitten by this snake or whatever it was, an Arud, by this rodent, if you ran to a body of water and you got your foot into the body of water before the rodent got to the water, you were going to be cured. Now, how that happened, I have no idea, but that's what they believed in. So the Gemara says, imagine, you have a person who gets bitten by this rodent and is running as fast as they can to go to the water before the rodent has the ability to get to the water because they want to be cured. Finally, you get to the water, and as you're sticking your foot in, you see that there's a child who's drowning in the water. And the child cannot swim. So you jump into the water and you save that child. The child comes out and is revived and is overwhelmingly thankful to this person for saving their life. Now the Medrash writes, who was responsible for saving the life of this child? Obviously the person. But let's think back one step further. Says the Medrash, who's really responsible is the rodent for biting the person, because otherwise if that didn't happen, I would never end up by the well. I would never end up by the water. And I would never have the information that made me go ahead and want to save this child. I only ended up there because I had a reason to go to the water. Well, says the Medrash, who really do you owe the debt of gratitude to? Moshe Rabbeinu comes and he saves you from being abused by the well. Well, obviously, Moshe Rabbeinu we have to thank. But why did Moshe Rabbeinu end up here? It was because an Egyptian got into a fight with him back there in Egypt. And as a result of that, he ended up being thrown out of Egypt. He runs away. So really, we owe a debt of gratitude back to that Egyptian back at home. And that's why it says, Ish Mitzri Hitzilanu. Our debt of gratitude is not only to the person that actually saves us with his or her own hands, but also we have to sometimes take a step back and think about what we owe to the person who made that person come into our lives. And it's not always so simple. And it's not always so easy to be grateful. It's difficult enough for us to be grateful to the people that we interact with, let alone going a step back in our minds and trying to figure out, well, are there other people who are also involved in this great miracle, in everything that took place? And it's something that we should give time to think about. It's not always such an easy task, but it's something worthy of our attention. Every year, on our anniversary, we always make sure to make a point of either sending a gift or an email or a card to the people who set us up and made our shidduch. So maybe I'm only married less than 10 years, so I still think about that. But it's something that we should think about. You're very happily married, and you have a great life, and you have children, and you have many blessings that came about as a result of the marriage that you had. Well, who's responsible for that taking place? And who was behind it? And sometimes it's not only the person who actually set you up, but sometimes it was somebody who introduced you to that person who set you up, ultimately. So it's something to think about, to be grateful and to consider how much gratitude we owe in our lives. Now, sometimes we say to ourselves, well, it wasn't a big deal for that person. Let's say by Shidduchim, you say, this person is a paid Shadchan. You know, I can't tell you how many times people have told me, YUConnects has an office. This is what they're paid to do. What do you mean? They didn't do me a favor. Okay. Might be true. The same way my accountant didn't do me a favor by going through my taxes, so my Shadchan also didn't do me a favor because this is what they're paid to do. This is what they're hired for. And this is what they spend their time doing. Now, the Medrash tells us, not so fast, and that really should not be our attitude. The Medrash tells us, when we speak about the Parsha, which we're living through now, which is the story of Yosef and his brothers, very complicated story, not easy for me to understand it at all, but we have a number, hey, here, along the way we know that Reuven is involved in saving his brother Yosef, and the brothers want to kill their brother Yosef, and they feel that they're justified in deciding why they want to do that, and Reuven says, hey, I cannot stand by while my brother is being destroyed, while they're going to kill him. This cannot be. So Reuven stands up and he defends his brother. So the Medrash tells us on that occasion, when Reuven goes and he defends his brother, the Medrash says as follows. Look at number eight. Reuven goes ahead and he saves his brother Yosef from the vicious attempt of his other brothers to kill him. So the Medrash tells us, where was Reuven all along? They were having negotiations about whether or not they should kill Yosef, and all of a sudden, Reuven jumps into the scene and he says, oh, you know, maybe we should save him. Where were you? How come you didn't get involved until this point? So the Medrash says, Reb Yosef, Reb Nechemia, Reb Rabbanan. They have a disagreement exactly what was going on. Why was Reuven absent for the beginning of the conversation, and all of a sudden he jumps in at the last minute? Says the Medrash, Reb Yosef, Omer, Kol Echad Ve'Echad Mehem Hayim Meshamesh Esaviv Yomo. They had a rotation. Yaakov Avinu was an old man, and he needed help, so each one of the children had to take a day where they were going to assist their father. That fine day happened to be Reuven's chance to help his father. His brothers, while he wasn't around, were going ahead with their plan, and all of a sudden he shows up at the end of the day, and he meets up with his brothers, and he says, hey, slow down here, what's going on? What did I miss today? How did you all do this without my being here? What?
Because it makes sense, they are in a different place. This is why Yaakov is
sending Joseph. So the Medrash says, that it was Reuven's chance to serve as his father. So you're asking, but Yosef is really at home, and that's why Yosef is sent to go look for his brothers. So it's a good question. It's a good question. My answer to that, I thought of that question. My answer to that would be that perhaps Reuven was at home. Then he comes back, and the brothers were having a discussion the whole day about figuring out, what are we going to do? We can't stand this brother Yosef. He's telling us all these crazy dreams, and he believes that he's going to be the master, he's going to be the king, and he's going to knock everybody else out. Anyway, they were discussing it for the whole day. Finally, Reuven gets there at the end of the day, and he says, hey, what's going on? He comes into the conversation, and he's all the way at the end of a whole day of deliberations, and finally he gets involved in there, and Yosef is now home. Now it's his chance to be home. And now the brothers are still discussing this issue, and finally Yosef shows up, and they say, aha, here's our chance, now let's kill him. And Reuven wakes up and he says, hey, you can't do that. I don't know. I think the question is better than the answer. But this is the first opinion in the Medrash. Writes the Medrash, I'm honest, usually, I try to be. You see, that I really don't appreciate, because sometimes people say, it's just the Medrash. The answer is Midrashim.
But the Midrash has a message.
Right.
It's not
exactly the pshat, but Midrashim also have to make sense.
Okay,
so sometimes...
It doesn't make sense, because Yaakov is sending Yosef.
Right.
All the brothers are not there. He wants to send him to see Shlom, mm-hmm. Barachim, right?
Mm-hmm.
If the brothers are okay, right? So how can Reuven be there,
uh-huh,
if he sent Yosef?
So I'll tell you something. My father, when I was younger, always told us the following. And it's an important comment to think about when you read stories in Chazal that sometimes seems very strange and very unreasonable to us, especially based on the storyline that we grew up with or that we know. So my father told me the following. We were learning once a Gemara. I forgot where the Gemara is. I think it's in Maseches Gittin, where the Gemara has a very strange story about, yeah, it's the Gemara in the fifth parak in Gittin about a bird that dropped an egg on a city, and it was such a big egg and such a humongous bird that it knocked out 60 cities by the egg that it laid. Okay, so you read that story and you say, come on, it's ridiculous. What does it mean? There's no way that there can ever be a bird that can lay an egg that can kill 60 cities in one time. Doesn't make any sense, right? What? Oh, so what exactly does it mean? So my father told me at the time when we got to that Gemara, he said, in the name of Reb Chaim Volozhiner, the following interpretation. He said, I don't remember which war it was about, but he said the following. There was a war in which thousands of people were killed. How did the war get started? Because the king one day wrote an edict, he wrote a decree, that tomorrow we're waging war and I want my army to go wipe out the city, and thousands of people are going to be killed. So that's the way the war started. How was the war covered in the newspaper the next day? They wrote, one drop of ink kills 10,000 people. What do you mean, one drop of ink? So you're going to read that 100 years later and say, how did one drop of ink kill 10,000 people? How's it possible? How big was the drop of ink? The answer is no, that's not what it means. It means the king put his pen into the one drop of ink and he wrote a little decree, and all of a sudden, based on that one drop of ink that he used, 10,000 people were killed. So if you were alive at the time, you understood that this is obviously what it meant. No one needed to interpret the headlines of the newspaper the next day. Everybody understood what it meant. One drop of ink that the king used killed out 10,000 people. So my father said that very often Reb Chaim Volozhiner used to comment that this is the way we have to approach Agados and Chazal as well. Sometimes you read a Medrash and you say to yourself, the story is so outlandish, it doesn't make any sense. So you have a bird that lays an egg on 60 cities and they all drown from the egg. How is it possible? Maybe at the time it made a lot of sense. And maybe we have to work hard enough to understand and recreate the story. It doesn't mean that Midrashei Chazal are just meant to be, you know, fairy tales that just make no sense to us. They're supposed to make sense to us. And there are messages that are latent in the Midrashim. Now you have to understand how to read them and perhaps how to recreate the story properly. But to just write it off and say, oh, it's a Medrash, doesn't matter anyway, is something that we try not to do. And I think that's a very insightful comment of Reb Chaim Volozhiner. And it's something that really is a guide to how we learn Medrash in general. So the first opinion in the Medrash here is, Reuven wasn't around by all the deliberations, by all the negotiations, because Reuven was busy helping his father out. Next pshat in the Medrash, Reb Nechemya Omer. Amar Reuven, Reuven says, Ani b'char v'ein hasir chon tali elabi. Reuven wakes up and he says, I was involved in all of this negotiation, and he was there like everybody else, but he says, I need to take responsibility, I'm the oldest child. And as the oldest child, I need to do something more than the rest of the children. So yes, we came to a conclusion that this is the right thing to do, to kill our brother, but in the end of the day, it's going to be on my shoulders. And he says, I can't live with this guilt. And therefore, v'yatzilei miyadam, I must defend my brother. I must make sure that this doesn't happen, because otherwise it's going to be on my head and I can't live with that. Third pshat in the Medrash is, Rabbanon Amri, Amar Ruvain, Ruvain says, Hu moneu siim achai ve'eini matzilo? Ruvain says, let's think back. Yosef HaTzadik has a dream. How many members of the family were included in his dream? What? 11. Now what does it mean, 11? So it means he included me also, Ruvain says. I was one of the people who was counted in as a member of the family. Now, I'm so indebted to him, Ruvain says. After the terrible mistake that I made with switching my father's bed, my mother's bed, and playing a game over there, whatever he did, and the Medrash says it was such a terrible thing that he did, hard to understand exactly what took place there, but Ruvain says, I thought I would be kicked out of the family. I thought no one would ever talk to me again. And my brother included me in the family story. Well, if my brother included me in the family story, then I owe it back to him. And I need to save his life. Now, think about that Medrash. Did Yosef actually do anything? All he did was went to sleep one night, and he had a dream that had nothing to do with himself, and he just told it over to his brothers. So I owe a debt of gratitude to somebody who just has a dream and shares the dream with the rest of the family, and I happen to be a part of that dream? What do I owe him? What did he do? Nothing. But the Medrash teaches us, even when you think somebody didn't work so hard to provide the service that they gave you, even if you say the Shadchan is paid full time to do this anyway, or the accountant is paid full time and this is why I pay them a salary, you still owe them a debt of gratitude. You ever think to yourself, why do we tip the mailman? Why do we give money or whatever you're supposed to give to the garbage man? Someone told me yesterday officially they're not allowed to take money. I said, they always do. So, why do we tip them? Why do we do that? This is what they're paid to do. The waiter in the restaurant. This is what they're paid for. Why do I have to give them anything? The answer is, yes, they might be paid for it, but I have to be grateful. Because even if somebody is paid for it, and even if they may not have worked so hard to perform this great help to me, in the end of the day, it still was a help to me. And that's what the Medrash tells us by Yosef HaTzadik, even though he did absolutely nothing, he wasn't involved at all. But Reuven says, I owe it back to him because he went out of his way to make sure to mention me in the context of the family story. And that to me is worth everything. And Reuven says, for that alone, I owe him a great debt of gratitude. We're told that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we're almost up to the story of Moshe Rabbeinu in Parsha Shmos, when he has his first experience, his first encounter with the Ribono Shel Olam. So where does that experience take place, as we know? On the occasion of the Sneh. Moshe Rabbeinu, there he is by the Sneh, and God appears to him from the burning bush, and he has a conversation with him. And the Medrash expands on the story that the Psukim don't really clue us into, but the Medrash says that this was a 7-day exchange that was going on between Moshe Rabbeinu and Hashem. Moshe Rabbeinu is told that he is the one who's going to be singled out to save the Jewish people from Mitzrayim. And he says, no, lo ish dvar manochi, I don't know how to speak, I'm not a politician, I don't know how to represent myself, I don't have enough self-confidence. And God says back to him, no, but you're going to be the one. And then he says, no, send somebody else to do it, I want Aaron to go, I want this one to go, that one to go. And the Medrash gives a whole story back and forth, 7 days they're fighting about it, whether or not Moshe Rabbeinu is going to go. Finally, after 7 days, God says to him, look, let's stop fighting because it's going to happen anyway. So you can fight for another 3 months, but in the end of the day, I'm going to win. So let's just get on with the program. Fine. Moshe Rabbeinu finally says, okay, if that's the way you want it, this is what it's going to be. I guess I'll go and I will save the Jewish people from Mitzrayim. However, he says, I'm not ready to go yet. Says the Medrash, and look at the bottom of the page, number Vav. Vayelech Moshe, after this whole 7-day fight that he has, so to speak, with God, and they're back and forth about whether or not he's going to save the Jewish people. After the 7 days, Moshe Rabbeinu says, Vayelech Moshe, Vayeshev al Yeser Chosnal. Moshe Rabbeinu returns to Yeser, who is Yisro, his father-in-law. Uvishash Amrla HaKadosh Baruch Hu, God said to Moshe Rabbeinu, Va'atah lecha v'ashlachacha al Paro. On this occasion, God says, I want you to be the one to go and negotiate with Paro. I want you to take my people out of Mitzrayim. Amrla, Moshe Rabbeinu says, Ribon ho'olam, come on. Eini yachol, I'm not able to. What do you mean you're not able to? We just fought about this for 7 days. I just told you that this is what's going to happen. You said you're going to do it. So what do you mean, Eni Yachal? What do you mean you're not going to be able to go? We just agreed that this is what's going to happen. He says, no. Mipnei shekibalti Yisro upasach li beso v'ani imo keben. Because Yisro was so gracious. Because Yisro invited me into his home. Because Yisro, my father-in-law, took care of me. And Yisro provided for me. Too bad my mother-in-law is not here today. And somebody who is nice enough to open their home to another person, nafsho chayev lo. I owe my life to that person. I owe my life to that person. I was a man who came to a foreign country. I knew nothing about Midian. I didn't know anybody here. I was running away. I was a fugitive. And this man, not knowing me at all, took me into his home, married me off to one of his daughters, took care of my family for the last couple of years, and now I'm just going to run away without saying goodbye? I need his permission. Lachach Amar Moshe Lefnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and therefore Moshe Rabbeinu says, Kiblani Yisro v'noag b'kavod. If Yisro was so gracious to me, and he was so respectful to me, and he took care of me so nicely, Eini Holech Ele Brishuso. I need his permission to be allowed to take leave from his home. And therefore it says that after the 7-day negotiation that he has with God, he says, there's one more thing that I need to do. I need to ask permission from the person who I owe my life to. And that is the person who welcomed me into his home and who took care of me. Now think about what was being put on hold at that time when Moshe Rabbeinu is going back to ask permission from his father-in-law. You have the entire Jewish people are waiting to come out of Mitzrayim. God has singled you out to do the job. And you're putting all of that on hold because you have to go say thank you to Yisro? You'll say thank you to him another time. You'll deal with the business. You'll send him a letter. Send him an email. I'll text him that I'm on my way. Now I had to go. Something very important. But the answer is that's not good enough. Nafsho chayev lo, says the Medrash. You owe it to that person. And a quick text or an email or a note is not enough. That's not enough. You need to show your appreciation and to take it seriously. And said the Medrash, even if it means that something else is going to have to wait, and something else very important is going to have to wait. You have an obligation, and that is your primary obligation to the people that have provided for you in your life. And that can never be forgotten, that can never be overlooked. So my father points out in the name of Rav Soloveitchik that we have a discussion the Gemara has in Maseches Brachos about how exactly one is supposed to say the tefillah that we say every Shabbos. On the one hand, we say Hamuhulol Berov HaTishbachos, that we give God most of our praise. What does it mean you give him most of your praise? Shouldn't you give him 100%? Of everything you have inside of you? Of all the gratitude you have, shouldn't you give 100% of it to God because you know He's the one who gave it to you throughout life? And on the other hand, the Gemara says we have some who feel you should say, you should refer to God as the Kel HaHodaos, as the God who is 100% the one who is thanked. So which one is it? Is it Kel HaHodaos or is it just Rov HaHodaos? And the answer the Gemara says, well, both of those perspectives are so beautiful and therefore we end up saying both of them. And this is why in the davening on Shabbos morning we say both. We refer to God as the Kel HaHodaos and also as the one who is Muhulal Berov HaTishbachos. So what exactly does that mean? Suggests Rav Soloveitchik based on a comment made in the Chovos HaLevavos as follows. He says we're invited to a big party. Now, somebody paid for the party, right? Let's say we go to a wedding and we have delicious food and we have whatever it might be. We really enjoyed ourselves. Now, who do we have to thank for that beautiful evening? Obviously the people who paid for the wedding. But we also have to thank, the Gemara says, Chamra Lamara Vitivusa Lashakya. It means one person pays for everything that you had, but you obviously have to thank the people who also worked along the way. So you thank the waiters as well, who served it to you. What do you mean? The waiter didn't pay. The waiter didn't really do anything. The waiter was actually paid to be here and to serve the food that he didn't even make. But we still have to go out of our way to thank the waiter. I always make a point at every time I go to a wedding to thank the members of the band. What would a wedding be without a band? Quiet.
Quiet.
Quieter. But boring, right?
Yeah.
A wedding would be nothing without a band. How many people go out of their way to say thank you to the person who just made the whole evening exciting? I think we owe it to them. And I think they're very often overlooked. And it's not easy for them. You ever talk to someone who's in the music industry? It's not so easy for them to be away from their families every single night, or the caterer. Not so easy to be away from your family every night to provide for all of us. Go out of your way and thank the caterer who's sweating in the kitchen and who can't think straight because they're so busy preparing this beautiful, lavish wedding that you were enjoying all night. Go out of your way. Well, says the Chovas HaLevavos, why are we thanking the caterer? Why are we thanking the band? Why are we thanking anybody? They didn't pay for anything. They're getting paid. So the Chovas HaLevavos explains, because if you don't thank the people who are the intermediaries, you're ultimately not going to thank the person who's on top either. And therefore, we have to train ourselves, he writes, to thank all the people who are in the middle, in order that we should ultimately come to thank the person who's really responsible. So yes, it might be true, the waiter doesn't really deserve a debt of gratitude from us, and the band doesn't really deserve any thanks from us, because after all, they're doing their job, and this is what they were asked to do, and this is what they were paid to do. However, he says, this is an obligation that we have, and the same goes with HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself. If we don't train ourselves to thank human beings, yes, it's true, we know that everything we have in life is really provided by God himself and God alone. There's nobody else who really does anything for us. God, anybody who employs us, it's only because God decided that they should have the money to give us the money that we deserve. And anybody who takes care of us in any way is only because God put them in that place to take care of us. So really, we should walk through life and say, I don't owe anything to anybody because God is the one who I'm going to thank. I'm going to have my relationship with him. And there's no reason to have any relationship with anybody else along the way. What do I care? And the answer is, if that's going to be your attitude, you're ultimately not going to thank God either. Because if you don't accustom yourself to being grateful to the people who are around you, who are providing you with a service, and even though it might not have been them who was responsible for it, but if you don't get used to the fact that we need to thank those who are around us, we are ultimately going to forget that we need to thank God himself. And this is why, explains Rav Soloveitchik, both of these terminologies make sense. We know that God is the Kel HaHodos. You are the ultimate reason for everything we have in our lives. We know that to be true. But we only give you Rov HaHodos. Hamuhula B'Rov HaTishbachos. We only offer most of our praise to you, but we leave over some of it for human beings. Because we understand and we appreciate that there are human beings who are involved in the greatness of our lives. And if we don't make time to thank the human beings who we interact with, we are ultimately going to forget about you as well. And that's why we refer to you and we say, Hamuhulal Birov HaTishbachos. We owe you most of what we have, and the rest of it we're going to leave over for the people that we interact with all the time. Now you think about in Parsha Shemos, after Yosef HaTzadik does all the great things in our Parsha Yos that we're reading now, and he saves the whole country, right? He has this whole master plan and it works. And he saves the whole country from a horrible disaster that was about to happen. So the Pasuk says, Vayakam Melech Hadash Al Haaretz Asher Lo Yadaz Yosef. A new king comes around and all of a sudden he doesn't know Yosef. And that's amazing. Is there an American who doesn't know about George Washington? Maybe today there are people who don't know. But any thinking American, how can you not know? Any politician, imagine you'd have a president of the United States who wouldn't know who George Washington is, who wouldn't know Thomas Jefferson. How is it possible? How can you not know who the people responsible for this whole country are? So how do you not know about Yosef? Were you just born yesterday? How do you become the king of Mitzrayim? You don't know about Yosef, so what does it mean, Asher lo yadaz? Yosef says, the Medrash commenting on that story, Kalakofer b'tovaso shel chaveiro, somebody who denies all of the gratitude that they owe to someone who did something good for them in life, lisof kofer b'tovaso shel makom, in the end, will come to deny the existence of God himself. So Paro comes along and he says, I don't know this guy Yosef, I don't want to hear from him, I don't care. You know, new chapter in history, let's move past that. Doesn't want to hear from him. And what do we say in the end of the story with Paro? He wakes up one day and he says, Lo yadati es Hashem. Moshe Rabbeinu comes to talk to him and he says, God said I want you to lead, you know, to let the Jewish people go out of your land. He says, Lo yadati, I don't know who God is. Who are you talking about? Who's that? So the Medrash says, it all starts with a lack of understanding that there are people in your life that you owe gratitude to. And once you knock them out of the picture, you ultimately knock God himself out of the picture as well. It's exactly what happened with Paro. It starts with just the small thing of him not recognizing Yosef and everything he owes him in his life, and it led him to ultimately say, Lo yadati es Hashem, I don't know God either. Because if you get into a habit of not being grateful to people that owe, that you owe something to, you ultimately won't even recognize how kind God is to you either. And this is really something that dates back to the very first parsha in the Torah. Adam Arishon, what happens? God gives him a wife. And there's some kind of mistake that takes place there. And both of them are responsible for the mistake. You're an adult. Take life into your own hands, right? Adam Arishon does something wrong. But how does he respond when God comes and challenges him about what happened with the story? What does Adam Arishon respond? Ha'isha asher nasata ima. It's all your fault, God, because you're the one who gave me this horrible woman, and after all, she's the one who made the mistake. Nothing to do with me. He denies everything, and he's so ungrateful. What about the companionship that you have with your wife? What about the fact that I gave you somebody that you can spend the rest of your life with? And the world is a pretty lonely place if you're the only human being. I would imagine it was a great chesed that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave him Chava. And Adam HaRishon refuses to recognize the great kindness. What are we told just a few psukim later? We have the story of the Dor HaFlaga. What is the story of the Dor HaFlaga? A community that decided to challenge God. And they build a tower and they say, we're going to overcome God's might and God's power. We're going to do what we want. We're going to have the world run the way we want it to run. We refer to them as the Dor HaFlaga. How does the Torah refer to those people? The Torah refers to that generation as B'nai HaAdam. Why are they referred to as B'nai HaAdam? That's another way of saying human beings. Says the Medrash, you know why they're referred to as B'nai HaAdam? These are the children of that horrible Adam HaRishon who also couldn't recognize God in life. And it all starts with a lack of gratefulness, with a lack of gratitude. So Adam HaRishon says, Ha'isha asher nasata imadi, he wasn't thankful to God for all the great blessings of having Chava in his life. And it all starts with that. And all it takes is one generation to then take that one step further and say, you know what? If we're not going to be grateful to him, we're going to follow in that tradition and we're going to challenge him. Like Paro, Layadati es Hashem. I'm not grateful to Yosef. It leads him to ultimately deny the existence of God. Here you have Adam HaRishon denies the gratitude that is deserving to God, and ultimately his grandchildren come along and say, we are B'nai HaAdam. We don't believe in God. We're going to challenge him. And that's where it all starts. And this is why it's so important for us to always make time in our schedules, and certainly throughout this season of the year, when Hanukkah is all about lehodos ulehallel, to make time not only to be grateful to the Ribono Shel Olam, but also to all those who we owe a debt of gratitude to in our own lives. I see it's running late, so let's skip a little bit and talk about the following. I want to leave with one very practical message that I think is a very important one. We have a pasuk where we're told, look at number Yud Gimel. Vatarod vatelet bein, we have all of the imahos, all of the women, the wives of Yaakov Avinu are having children. And Leah once again conceives. Vatelet bein, and she has a child. Vatomer, and she says, hapam odes Hashem. This time I will offer my thanksgiving. Alkein kara shemo Yehuda, and as we know, this is why she refers to her child as Yehuda. Vatamod miledes. And then that's it, she stops having children. Now ask the Mefarshim on Chumash. Leah is the one who finally is grateful to Hashem for all the great bounty in her life. And Leah even names the child Yehuda so that every time she reminds herself of this child, every time she calls him in the street, she'll remind herself, oh, I'm so thankful. Every time he's playing in the sandbox and she calls him to come home, she reminds herself that I owe a debt of gratitude to Hashem. So if this woman goes so far out of her way to be grateful and to give thanks, and to call her child Yehuda, wouldn't you want to give her another 100 children? Wouldn't you want that experience to repeat itself? You finally have a human being who's willing to recognize your presence in this world. You finally have a human being after hundreds of years who's willing to name a child after their feelings of gratefulness, of gratitude. So why does the pasuk say about Talmud Miledus, she stops having the ability to have children? Why God take that ability away from her? Explains the Das Zakenim Mibalei HaTosfos such a powerful insight. He says, often you have people who have some kind of yeshua. You have people who were looking forward to a refuah, to some sort of something. They needed something. And God gave it to them. And they stop everything they're doing and they're very grateful, as they should be. And they highlight the incredible gift that they've been granted, that they've been given. And he writes, they feel confident in the fact that now life is going to be good. Because now I got this Yeshua that I looked forward to, I got this refuah that I needed, I got the parnasa that I needed, something that a person really needed, and they're very thankful. And they're content. And they don't bother to highlight at that moment that I hope that God will continue to provide for me in the future as well. So Leah here says, Hapam Odes Hashem, God, my life is amazing. You just gave me another child. I never expected to have this child. I'm so eternally grateful. And she stops there. And she doesn't bother to say, and I need you to help me in the future to continue to provide my life with great blessings. If a person doesn't realize that every moment of life is only because God gives us that moment of life, only because He's so kind to give us that opportunity to experience life, then God will take it away. And here God suspends Leah's ability to have any more children because she felt so content in the blessings that she'd been given, and she didn't bother to think about, well, I need God in my life going forward as well. And I need Him to provide for me going forward also. And this is really something that you can contrast with Rachel Imenu. Rachel as a child, after many years of having very difficult time not having children. And she says, Asaf Elokim Escher Pasi. She calls him Yosef because now she feels God has taken care of her. God has given her a child. She's no longer going to be embarrassed. Vatikra es Shemo Yosef Lemar. Why does she call his name Yosef? Because she meant to say, Yosef Hashem Li Ben Acher. Why are you asking for another child? You just gave birth. Why don't you just sit down and appreciate the gift that you have? What are you running to the next kid already? And the answer is no. That's the proper attitude. Yosef Hashem Li Ben Acher. I know that anything that I'll have in my life is only because the Ribono Shel Olam is with me. And Rachel Imenu understands that. And therefore, on the occasion of the highest moment of her life, when she finally has that child that she so much looked forward to, she says, I'm going to use this as an opportunity to ask for more. There's no shortage of how much God can give the world. He's not going to run out. And we ask Him on the opportunities that we have to give incredible thanks and overwhelming gratitude to Him. We ask Him that not only do we appreciate everything we had until now, but we ask Him that He continue to give us going forward as well. And if we don't do that, says the Daos HaKeinim, Vatamod Miledes. God says, you obviously don't appreciate enough how involved I am in your life. And perhaps I'll have to take something away in order for you to understand that it's only because of my blessings that you have everything you have. And this is something that we mention in Halal as well. Throughout the Yom Tov of Chanukah, we say Halal every day. And when we mention in Halal, something very unusual. In Halal, we spend our time thanking Hashem for all the great miracles and everything that took place over all the generations. It's a beautiful paragraph that we go through when we say the Halal. However, in the middle of Halal, there's something that's very uncharacteristic, something that really doesn't belong, and that is, all of a sudden we say, Ana Hashem Hoshiana. Why are we asking Hashem to save us when we're in the middle of praising Him? How does that fit into the context of Halal? And the answer is, without Ana Hashem Hoshiana. Without Ana Hashem Atzlichana, without making that recognition and that statement clear, that going forward, as thankful as we are for everything in the past, and as much as we owe you for everything you've given us, we ask you that you continue to sustain us. Because we make that declaration in public and we say, without you giving us going forward, we are not going to have anything. And that's something we all recognize and it's something we all understand and appreciate. And this is really what we say in Nishmas. Ad hei na'azaruna rachamecha, until this point you have helped us. Ve'al titshenu Hashem Elokeinu lanetzach. We ask Him, not only are we grateful for everything we have, but we ask Him, al titshenu Hashem Elokeinu lanetzach. Don't abandon us going forward either. So when we come to a celebration of Chanukah, like the Rambam says, we make this something which is all about halal v'hodah, something which is all about giving thanksgiving, making time to appreciate the blessings that we have. We say in the Al HaNisim and in the Bracha that we mention every day of Hallel, every day of Chanukah, we mention Vayamim Ahem Bazman Hazeh. Says the Levush, what it means is, we thank Hashem not only for the great miracles that took place thousands of years ago, but also Bazman Hazeh. And those occasions that we thank Hashem for everything that our nation has been through, we thank Him also Bazman Hazeh, for the great miracles that we continue to experience every day and every moment of our lives on Lishecha Shebechol Yom Imanu. And on this occasion, we not only make time to thank Him, but we also offer a tefillah. And we say, Adhena Azarunu Rachamecha, Velo Azavunu Chasadecha, V'altetsheinu Hashem Elokeinu Lanetzach. Ana Hashem Hoshiana. We use this as an opportunity not only to express our gratitude, but also to ask Him going forward that He continue to sustain us, because we have that ultimate recognition that without His doing so, we have nothing in our lives. Yes.